Welcome to SinoPinion, a podcast supported by the Center for International Security and Strategy, CISS, at Tsinghua University, China. We provide Chinese perspective with a global vision. I'm Da Wei, Director of CISS, greeting you from Beijing.
And I am Xiaoyu Qun from the Shanghai Institute for International Studies, co-host of SinoPinion, joining you from Singapore.
Today we are joined by my colleague, Zhou Bo, a senior fellow at CISS and an expert on military and security issues.
Hello, I'm Zhou Bo, speaking from Beijing.
Okay, so by January the 20th, President Trump will have completed 1 year of his second term. Today, we'll focus on U.S. foreign policy under Trump's first year back. How is it viewed within China's policy circles? Has this past year been good or bad for the U.S., China, and the whole world at large? Professor Zhou Bo, how do you look at this question?
Well, I'm not totally surprised in that actually we have already weathered the first term of Donald Trump. So in his second term, we basically know how he would behave. Well, he's one of a kind, and he really behave like a revolutionary. Well, the significance is still for us to see. Probably historians could tell more about how he might be a normal person or even an aberration of history. But since he still has 2 years to go, it remains to see what he's going to do next. But generally speaking, as I have told the British newspaper, The Guardian, in an interview, when he finished his first 100 days in office, I was asked how I thought of him. And I said, well, I believe the damages he has done to Americans' credibility and image is more than all his predecessors combined. Well, right now, I don't believe I'm exaggerating. I would say that it probably is worse than what I said because of what is happening, right? His, attack on Venezuela, his threat to annex the Greenland, and all of the strange ideas coming from nowhere. Well, I think all the world knows that.
Yuqun, let me ask you a question.
Yeah, please.
You are an observer, of course, of American foreign policy. So has Trump's foreign policy in past 1 year surprised you or not? Is there anything you did not expect it before he swore in? Or maybe everything unfolded were all anticipated?
Right. I will be very frank with you. In general, I think four things surprised me a little bit. The first thing is his policy towards the Western Hemisphere. Of course, we understand that his policy will be very assertive, will be focused on the Western Hemisphere. But overall, that on January the 3rd, the Trump administration started the action on Venezuela and took Maduro to New York City. That was a surprise because it was it looked like a regime change, right? Of course, the type is different comparing with previous regime change policies of the U.S. administrations. No boots on the ground. But overall, it's a big surprise for me. And secondly, his policy towards India. So if the U.S. strategy is to compete with China, then of course U.S. needs India to cooperate with the United States to deal with China. But right now, the U.S.-India relationship is not in a good shape. And certainly, I would say the domestic constraints on Trump's foreign policy is very limited within the United States. The U.S. Congress so far has played a very insignificant role, I would say, because a lot of reasons. And also the checks and balances system within the United States have look like broken right now. The fourth thing is the overall stability of China-US relations for the past year, because most of the policy analysts predicted that the first year of Trump's second term, he would strengthen his policy to compete with China. But it's quite interesting. Of course, a lot of the reasons behind that, but overall, the China-US relations have been quite stable. Yeah.
Well, Dawei may be one of the top experts on China-US relationship. You can also share with us some of your views on this very general question.
Sure, sure. Actually, I'm a little bit surprised there that there are only four things that Yuqun said surprised her. Actually, I would say almost everything in past 1 year in American foreign policy surprised me. Of course, including China-US relations. I think 1 year ago, I think I said that on the record. I think the China-US relations will face danger of free fall. So at that time, I was very pessimistic. But of course, it is true that some very bad thing happened in past 1 year, particularly in April, the so-called Liberation Day tariff. And later in September, we had, China-US had a friction, very serious friction over export control. But all in all, China-US relations is in a stabilizing period of time. And surprisingly, I think most of the experts, I think in China and probably in the US, believe that the year 2026 will be a relatively stable year. So more and more people become cautiously optimistic about at least the China-US relations in 2026. So I think probably what had happened in past years surprised all of us, at least to some extent. So I would like to ask any of you, maybe Mr. Zhou Bo, how would you describe or define past 1 year's Trump's foreign policy? Some people say he is isolationist. Some people say he is populist. How will you define the major character of the first year Trump foreign policy?
Well, I would say in terms of Donald Trump himself, I think he is more than exceptional. He's simply unique. He's one of a kind, as I said earlier. So Americans' foreign policy in general is moving toward the retrenchment, as it is reflected.
This is quite controversial, actually, in China, whether the U.S. foreign policy is in a retrenchment. But you think it is retrenchment, right?
Well, that's a very good question, because, even before the United States published its strategic report, I would consider that the U.S. foreign policy, not only foreign policy, but its whole commitment, would be focused on Indo-Pacific. Yeah? So that is a sure thing. So we are seeing two things. One is because Americans' global strength actually has declined, so I believe it is inevitable that the U.S. would move away from the rest of the world to become more focused. But you see, the United States is also Indo-Pacific nation. At least it claims itself as Indo-Pacific nation. So they will stay focused in this region because that's where, the center of gravity is. Yeah. So the U.S. would not move away. So it will stay here. Some people argue that the U.S. just want to stay in the Indo-Pacific to contain China. I think that is nonsense. Yeah. Because it is still focused on its first priority, that is to catch the train that is faster moving, because that's where economic center is. So while the U.S. is moving towards Western Hemisphere, it still would be, focused on the Indo-Pacific region as well. That's my opinion.
Yeah, I would like to add one word before this retrenchment. I think it's a chaotic retrenchment. Within the United States, there have been a lot of debates on how to make this retrenchment strategy successful. Some people support full retrenchment. Other people support partial retrenchment. But my sense is that the whole retrenchment strategy is very chaotic. If you look at the first 4-5 months of last year, the dismantle of USAID and focus on the domestic issues, challenges, homeland security, all those things look like it's a full retrenchment. But just like Zhou Bo said, that because Asia Pacific, it's the center of economic growth and innovation, that there's no way that United States is going to withdraw from the region. So, of course, still focus on Asia Pacific. But if you look at the strategy, its policy towards this region, its policy towards Japan and South Korea, its traditional ally in the region, I don't think it's a goodbye from the Biden administration's strategy towards the region. A lot of regional allies are complaining about Trump's policy. So I've seen this very chaotic situation in this region and also Trump's policy. So that's why I would like to add chaotic before this retrenchment.
So no matter it's chaotic or not, do you two believe this is a good thing or bad thing for China?
Well, I think his focus is still on China. To some extent, it is good because when the U.S. retrenched from the rest of the world, actually China is moving toward the rest of the world, right? Because whatever he has been doing or he is doing is certainly something good for China's image. Elsewhere. So I think if you look at the whole picture, I think such kind of a retrenchment is good for China. But he will stay in this region. That means competition with China will still go on. But the real question is, to what extent has such competition changed from Biden administration? I would say China has weathered, his bashing. And China certainly has emerged even stronger, out of this kind of tariff war. So in the future, I think for Chinese people, even psychologically speaking, they would feel stronger themselves, and the confidence in competition with the United States would grow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think, of course, it's a big opportunity for China right now, because the U.S. policy has shifted a lot of countries and government's idea approach towards China. For example, Canada, right? Prime Minister Carney just visited China, tried to adjust Canada's relation with China. But another interesting thing is about global governance, because the Trump administration is withdrawing from a lot of international organizations, multilateral mechanisms. So theoretically, the space for China is bigger, much bigger now. But the debate right now within China is what China should do, whether we should fill the vacuum 100% or should we have a selective approach to deal with the future global governance. And also another challenge for China, I think, is how should we deal with our neighboring countries like Japan, like South Korea? Because Trump administration's policy towards this region, I think it gives the right-wing force within Japan a much bigger imagination space that they think Japan can do more in this region. And also in South Korea, a lot of people are talking about they should have nuclear weapons. So these are also big challenges for China, I think.
Well, maybe I can say a few words about, either South Korea or Japan as intention to acquire nuclear weapons. First of all, on Japan, I think the intention, in spite of some voices somewhere, is still low to acquire nuclear weapons. And on South Korea, yes, I'm fully aware that according to, for example, opinion polls, 70% South Koreans say they would like to have nuclear weapons. But I believe the real question is how actually you ask the right questions. For example, if you ask them a question like this, yes, we could have nuclear weapons, but what about strong response coming from China? And where are we going to conduct the first nuclear test, given that our population is so big? And what about the United States, who could say, okay, since you have already had a nuclear weapon, why can't we withdraw from South Korea? If you ask questions like this, I'm sure the approval rate for having nuclear weapon will go down considerably. But I think just now Cao Yiqun has asked a number of good questions. Dawei, what do you think about some of these questions?
Yeah, I basically I agree with you. I think this retrenchment, if we use this term, I think generally speaking, gave China some opportunity. I think China's pressure is the pressure China is facing is lower than in previous years. I think at the same time, I think China has made a lot of progress in its economic and technological development. So these also make China more confident. I think in past 1 year, we have seen several, I sometimes say three moments in China-US relations. One is the, I call it DeepSeek moment. Actually, of course, I'm not referring just to DeepSeek, but the other technological breakthrough in AI and other industries. The second moment is the, I call it Trump tacos moment. That's in April and May when China retaliate the tariff threat from the US. I think China forced the US side to sit down to the negotiation table. So the third moment, I will say, was the rare earth moment in September. So both countries threatened the other side with this supply chain thing. I think for the first time now, the two countries have economically has a capability of mutual assured disruption. So the two sides can disrupt the other side's supply chain. The U.S. can, of course, disrupt China in many from many areas, particularly the semiconductor. But for the first time, China also showed the capability to disrupt the supply chain of the United States. So then this is another, you know, MAD between China and the United States. I think that will help the two sides to limit their the level of their dispute, their friction, and can help the two sides sit down on the negotiation table. So from all this above, I think the pressure China is facing seems lower than previous years. But of course, I also echo what Yiqun said. She said it's a chaotic retrenchment. I think sometimes chaos gave you a lot of challenges, right? So I think the Biden administration gave China a lot of pressure. I will say it's more, it's a kind of predictable pressure. While the Trump administration, with this chaos, I think they it sometimes gave China unpredictable pressure, including the loosening of the alliances, and you discussed South Korea and Japan. Actually, the transatlantic relationship has also changed a lot. We are seeing the drama around Greenland in recent days. So these changes, of course, will give other countries, including China, a lot of challenges. So I think generally speaking, to sum up, I think we feel more confident from China's perspective. But at the same time, there are many, sometimes we say black swan. Many black swan are flying in the sky.
So do you two see any predictability for China-US relations of this year? Because President Trump wants very much to visit Beijing this coming April, and President Xi is also going to visit the United States later this year. So how do you see, because both two working teams would closely cooperate with each other to make these two visits happen. And so how do you see the coming visit by President Trump and the recent situation in Venezuela? Does it have any implication for Trump's visit to China?
Well, that way, I think both of us can answer this most important mm-hmm. questions. Yeah. Sometimes I'm just trying to think what Trump is really thinking. I think compared to the rest of the world, he does have some kind of a special place reserved in his heart for China and President Xi, because he talked how he likes President Xi and how he respects the Chinese leadership and so forth. So I think his visit certainly is welcomed. And for such a state visit, of course, there would be some positive outcomes anticipated. So therefore, it would be a smooth visit. But I'm also trying to think what kind of outcomes they might be. I don't believe it would be a kind of a major change, even in tone, from the United States on the Taiwan issue, right? I don't think so. I hope so, but I don't think so. But on some other things, I don't know what the kind of deals we're going to have. But the point is that so long as, you know, the two leaders from the two great countries keep such exchange of visits, that actually would be a greater relief for everybody in the world.
Yeah, I think, Zhou Bo, you touched upon the most important point at the end of your remark. I think the visit, of course, we don't know how many visits we will have in 2026, but at least two, maybe four. I think those frequent presidential level engagement will send very positive signal to both countries and to the whole world that China, US, the two countries are trying to manage the bilateral relations. And I think at least, let's say, in Beijing and in Washington, D.C., I think the atmosphere of the bilateral relations is not good. Many people in both capitals have very strong, at least a suspicion, even a lot of, you know, frustration to the other side. So with that atmosphere, I think we cannot make any serious progress in the bilateral relations. So the meeting, presidential meeting, will actually, what we have experienced in Busan in South Korea, already send that signal. And I think with several, maybe we will see state visits this year. If we can have two state visits, I think the signal will be strong. Then that's, I think that's very helpful for people in the two capitals to be more proactive to stabilize, even improve the bilateral relations. I think actually this April, I'm still quite confident that the two side will probably have some kind of deal, at least in trade and economic side. I hope the two sides can have a kind of formal agreement on tariff. rather than just postpone the tariff for, you know, several months or half a year. I think we should have agreement on tariff, then give the business community some certainty. And I hope we will agree on the investment issue. The U.S. market should welcome China's investment, at least to the so-called non-sensitive areas. I think that's helpful for the President Trump's goal of, you know, creating jobs and also rebalancing the trade. I think these are very helpful. Of course, maybe purchase and other things, at least on economic and trade side, I'm quite confident. But of course, I share the cautiousness of Zhou Bo on Taiwan. I hope we can make some progress, but we only have 3 months, and this is a very sensitive issue, so it's not easy. Yuqin is an expert on Taiwan. Maybe she has some secret, you know, news that I don't know.
Sorry, I don't have any. I guess Zhou Bo wants to say something, right,
well,
on that topic?
Yeah, well, just now, I think that we has mentioned quite rightly that that this relationship should be managed. Well, if I could sum it up with my best wishes for this relationship, I would say, well, I hope China-U.S. relationship is simply manageable. Huh? China prefers to talk about a cooperation, while United States prefer to talk about a competition. Well, I think this relationship is really one of competition. Why is that? Because in this bilateral relationship, the United States is still stronger than China. So this relationship can only be, you know, somehow dictated by the stronger one. So if the United States says it's one of competition, it's useless for China to insist that this has to be one of a cooperation. But I think it is, you know, in the common interest of the two sides to make it manageable. So that is my best hope for this relationship looking down the road.
I'm curious about your view on, for example, on China-India. In the context of this changing American foreign policy, American foreign strategy, China's relations with India, China's relation with Europe, will we have more opportunities in the coming years?
Well, I think China's relationship with India was sought because of the deadly brawl in Galvan Valley. And after that, we have seen a kind of you know, strategic shifting of Indian policy towards the United States, but that was tactical because India is one of the founders of a long ally movement. So it is a grandmaster in striking, you know, balance. With the American tariff on India, for example, yeah, I think this kind of China-India relationship is starting to warm up again, but it is actually slower than I have anticipated. But I think the right direction, yeah, is already there. With Europe, I think Europe is also changing its policy towards China, even before J.D. Vance's speech at the Munich conference last year. Ursula von der Leyen said something already, which have indicated a kind of change. But of course, J.D. Vance's remarks at the Munich conference, well, are totally appalling, yeah? So I think we're going to see this kind of a warming up relationship. But the point is, of course, there is the war in Ukraine there. But I think Europe, by and large, understand what China thought about this war. And it has, by and large, given up its, you know, unrealistic hope on China. So this relationship could become actually more practical, I would say.
I think the the U.S. Alliance politics is very complicated, right? The transatlantic alliance has been there for many decades. Of course, there have been quarreling, fighting between United States and those European countries for many years. And the recent fight between them, I don't know, maybe they will find a way to deal with that. But in general, I visited Europe recently, and I was very much impressed by one sentence from a European colleague. He said that Europe usually, normally Europe would think China as a country seeking modernization. But right now, China is a country defining the 21st century modernization. So, which shows that within the European society, they are trying to understand the so-called new China in a different way. Of course, there are still many politicians, either in Brussels or in other capitals of those European countries. They have their very biased view on China. But overall, I can sense there is some new thinking in Europe regarding their policy towards China. So I hope this kind of momentum will continue, and we will see the unstoppable momentum of the improvement of China-European relations.
Yeah. Well, I think China can make a unique contribution to help European countries to re-industrialize. Yeah, I say re-industrialize in that basically, apart from China and the United States, we haven't seen much progress in artificial intelligence anywhere in the world. And China, of course, is the world factory, but this world factory is not only in China. It is also elsewhere, in Europe, for example, yeah? Talking specifically about the car industries, I don't believe that European countries can send us, export us the traditional cars. So it has to be, engineered with Chinese, electronics, so on and so forth. So that is why we are actually seeing more and more joint research and development, either in Europe or in China, between Chinese and Western car manufacturers.
So I think between China and Europe, for example, the economic models are very different. I think besides Ukraine war, this different economic model is probably the root cause of the tension between China and Europe. So do you think this difference will, fundamental difference will continue to be there? And if so, probably there will be a limit of the improvement of China-Europe relations, even though President Trump may give us some opportunity.
Talking about the China-European relationship, there are a few things on my mind. First of all, sometimes I'm thinking about NATO. Yeah. So the NATO strength actually is not really a military strength, because it's also a political tool. Actually, the first priority is to protect the Western democracy. But with Western democracy itself on steady decline since 2006, yeah, could we see NATO, growing with strength? That is one thing, right? And with a lot of European capitals becoming more and more populistic, with right-wing leaders, I don't believe we have a rosy picture there in Europe. But with this kind of self-defeat in their own ideology, which is described as a liberal democracy, I think they have to find a way out. So I think that is what Yuqin has said about what a European has told her, right? So they are also trying to find out a new path. And certainly the United States doesn't look like the right direction now. So where is the new focus of international geopolitics and geoeconomics. It is in this region. I'm not talking only about China. I'm talking about the Indo-Pacific being the center of gravity.
So if we come back to China-US relations, I would say that because of this bilateral relation, these days have global implications. So any the so-called third de facto, the third factor, their relation with the China-US bilateral relations is really critical these days for China. On security level, economic and industry level, and also ideological level. So that's a challenge for China's diplomacy. I think we should have more skillful, more sensitive diplomacy regarding the so-called third factor here.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think that the world is becoming more difficult, actually. If, you know, a lot of people say we are in a multipolar world, so I agree with them. But for me, multipolar or multipolarity does not only mean the distribution of power. Actually, I think it also means the major players on the world stage all have different policy agendas and different conflict, the different values, and their values and interests conflict with each other. So at least China, US, Russia, India, Europe, and others, maybe Japan, we have cooperation with all of them. We have conflicts with all of them. So that will become very complicated, I think. Yes. So,
and also, and sorry, that regarding China-US relations, I think there are also debates within China is about the midterm election in the United States. And what's that implication for our bilateral relations, right? We have, at least I have heard different views. One view is that, okay, the midterm election is very important for our bilateral relation. But the other side is saying that, no, it's not that important, right? So that's what we're going to observe for the next months ahead, right?
Yes, my view, I could be wrong, correct me if I'm wrong. My view is the midterm election per se is not that important to China-US relations, but the outcome of the midterm election could be quite important. Why? I think the midterm election per se is about domestic agenda, right? So at current context, I think the most important thing probably number one issue is inflation, or we say affordability issue in the United States. And maybe number two is immigrants. So those are domestic issues. And I think on both issue, immigration and affordability, I think the Trump administration is facing heavy pressure. The situation is not very good. So I don't think that the election itself is directly linked to China-US relations. To the contrary, I think because of those challenges domestically, I think the Trump administration need at least a stable bilateral relations, and maybe also need some achievement that he can declare a victory as achievement, so some good news. So I think the election per se is not that, I don't think will play a very negative role, but I don't know, of course, we don't know the outcome so far, and you know, at current phase, we don't know the outcome of the midterm election. I think the popular view is the Republicans could maybe will lose the House and probably the Senate. We don't know. So if that happens, I mean, the Republican Party lose one chamber of the legislative branch, that will make President Trump some kind of lame duck in the coming years. And this is already his second term. Of course, I don't know if he will seek the third term or not. But if he wants pursue the third term, probably in the next 2 years, the Republicans will also try to, you know, think about the post-Trump era after 2028. So, I mean, the outcome of the midterm election could weaken the power, the strength, the presidency of President Trump. So that could damage the achievement we made this year, and or at least limit President Trump's capability to make more achievement in the coming years. But I don't know if you agree with me or not. This is my personal view, yeah.
Well, just now you mentioned you don't know whether he could have his third term. Well, I think probably that's the only term in which he can try to win a Nobel Prize, right? Yeah, yeah. Because, well, with his war on Venezuela, I know his dream of winning a Nobel Prize has become a pipe dream already.
How do you think of that, Yuqin?
About what? About the midterm election?
About the midterm, yes. What's your view?
Midterm, I agree with, basically, I agree with your analysis because the midterm election have told, would show us that, of course, President Trump's view on China is that he wants to stabilize the bilateral relationship with China. But the mainstream views in Washington within the Beltway about China is quite different comparing with Trump's view. That's a big element or factor that when China thinks about China-US relations, about the US policy towards China, because all the negative views, very hawkish views are still there. And that I have always had this question. What is President Trump's view about China? How does it influence the Washington's mainstream view about China? So far, it looks like still they're very different. Only President Trump welcomes China's investment into the United States. Only President Trump welcomes more Chinese students studying in the United States. So this kind of situation will still last for a period of time. And that's a very big challenge for China-US relations in the time ahead. Yeah, that's my view.
Well, I think, Yuqin, you have made a very good point because in spite of the undisputed power of President Trump right now, he's actually surrounded by China hawks, right? So once he's out of control or once he steps down, what might happen to China-US relationship? It really remains to be seen. But as I said before, we are getting more confident. And so I don't believe it matters that much for us.
I agree with you that the President Trump's view may be very different from many people, particularly the hawks in Washington. I think if we can manage the bilateral relations well and even make some progress, I think the president of the United States has the capability to shape the narrative in Washington, D.C. And if that happens, I think that will be good. I mean, for instance, if we look back to history, when President Nixon visited China, that was, of course, I mean, the supports in Washington at that time was very, very few, very, very low. But afterward, he changed the bilateral relations. And when Jimmy Carter set up the diplomatic relations with China at that time, also the Congress opposed that. But once he, made it, I think the whole atmosphere changed. Of course, I'm not expecting similar, you know, dramatic change happen in Washington. I don't think it's possible, but at least I think we can try to create some space, actually in both countries, for a more constructive, more healthy, rational discussion about our policy to the other side. I think in the long run that will be very helpful. Now I think actually in past 1 year, I have already seen some sign of this new thinking, new discussion. I think that will be quite good. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
Yes. So I think we are nearing the end of today's program. So let me ask you this question, maybe a little bit provocative. If you were to give a score to the first year of Trump's second term, as a Chinese, of course, how many points would you give to him out of 10?
I would say no more than 6. Well, I think it has to be divided, right? China and the rest of the world. On China,
China's perspective, China's perspective.
Yeah, from China's perspective, on China, I think it is 8 or even more than 8. Yeah, mm-hmm. On the rest of the world, I think it is 5, maybe maximum, right? Yeah, given the damages has done to the world, right?
Yeah. What about you, Yuqing?
I would like to encourage President Trump to stabilize China-U.S. relations in the future years, future 3 years. So I would give him more, like 9.
Okay.
Oh, good. Very high.
It's an encouragement. It doesn't mean that I agree with his policy towards China, but I hope he would do better. So that's why.
It's your hope rather than what he has done, right?
I hope he will listen to our podcast and be encouraged.
I think I will give him 8 at least on China-US. I think this is the same with Zhou Bo. And to the rest of the world, I will give him a 7. I understand why, Zhou Bo, you gave him a pretty low score. But I think, I disagree with many of his policies. But I have to say, the world before before the first Trump administration, I mean, the world that we have lived in since the end of the Cold War was a very good time. But at the same time, in past one decade, we have witnessed many problems and challenges of this old international orders, no matter how you defined in the West, it's been called liberal international order or something. I think those order have a lot of problems, no matter from China's perspective or from the West perspective. And the globalization has already, you know, of course, have very bright side of that, but also show the dark side of that. So I think the old model was, before Trump, the old model was already kind of unsustainable. I think President Trump, no matter what he did was correct or wrong, he has been some kind of, destructive construction, I mean. He is destroying the old order, which actually I personally quite like. But of course, probably he cannot build a new order. But by distracting that, I think that's a necessary step for the new order. So I don't know. So for that reason, I will give him a 7.
So he's America's Mikhail Gorbachev, right?
All right. Today we discussed the change that Trump's first year in office has brought to the U.S. foreign policy, as well as the impact these changes have made on China and the world. Thank you for listening to this episode of Sino-Opinion, Chinese Perspective, Global Vision.
For more insights from Chinese scholarship on global issues, please follow or subscribe to our podcast. Until next time.